what we have now is something different from what we had before, that's been redefined, with brain injury being a big part of that definition. But I don't want to feel that it defines us.
He's still here and I'm so grateful for that. But he isn't the same as he used to be. His essence is still there, absolutely.
It's important to acknowledge the sadness as
definitely.
Well.
Definitely, and yeah. feel it when it yeah. comes up. And every now and then it will catch you. It's yeah. it's grief, isn't it? And sometimes it can be the smallest things.
As well as the love, and I think this about any relationship, is also the respect, actually. For any relationship to continue and to be successful, there has to be love, but also respect of each other. You know, we're still here.
Well done.
Thank you. Well done, Hector, as well. Yeah.
Hello, and welcome to On a Good Day with me, Elizabeth Callahan.
And me, Julia Ajayi. This is the podcast which delves into brain injury and its impact on all involved.
You've got us on this episode. Julia and I are going to be looking at some of the lessons we've learned since our husbands had a brain injury. I recently marked 5 years since Paul had his stroke, and it's really got me thinking about how life has changed, how he's progressed, how we've all kind of changed, or our whole family has within that time, and how different life is. Isn't it, Julia? And actually, Julia and I are together today in the same place, which is really exciting. We don't often get together, so it's so, so great to have you here. So thanks, Julia.
Yes, it's wonderful to be sitting next to you, Elizabeth, as we're talking. And it's now been 13 years and 4 months since Hector had his brain hemorrhage. And so there's been a long time since then, and lots to think about in terms of the impact of that on myself and my family. And I think one of the things that we're going to reflect on today is that difference in time as well. And we both bring that difference to our conversation, don't we? So I think there's so much to unpick.
Absolutely. I see Julia. It is. I kind of see Julia as a kind of slight oracle of what's to come, or, you know, how your situation is. And we're all so different. Our journeys are so, so different. Every brain injury is different, isn't it? Going back 5 years, I mean, I can't believe it's been 5 years since it's happened. A lot of that time was just a complete haze.
I think I spoke to you quite soon after Paul was ill, not very soon, but at least a year or something, maybe.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure about being an oracle, because as you say, everyone's experience is different, and families are different, and people are different, aren't they? But one thing I think that we both have in common, which is actually something that I know is quite difficult to achieve, is that we've maintained our relationships with our partners up to this point. And that's actually something that is often very challenging after one partner has had a brain injury. So the fact that we are able to talk to each other today, sitting next to each other, you know, in your family home, and having come from my family home, I think that is an achievement. And it's not always possible for everyone. I want to acknowledge that as well, because often the situation and the changes are very difficult and don't mean that that can happen. But for both of us, I think from where we're sitting today, that's something to celebrate.
Yeah, absolutely. There have definitely been times, you know, if I'm honest, where I felt that things couldn't continue. Definitely been moments where I've been, I can't, you know, I don't know if we can do this anymore, how we can make it work. But yeah, I feel we're in a slightly different place now. I remember, you know, Sarah Chalice, who I think she's on episode 7, was talking about the complexities of being with someone, caring for somebody who's had a brain injury. It is extremely complex. And, you know, 5 years ago, you're thrust into this life-changing situation. And at the time, you don't know how your life is going to change. What I did know 5 years ago was that Paul was very, very sick. He was in intensive care. I didn't know if he was gonna live or die. Nobody did. And you know, it wasn't until a week when after he was in intensive care that we got that news that he'd had a stroke after they'd done a brain scan, because he was there for a completely, you know, different reason to do with his heart. So at the time, you just keep going. You keep going to the hospital. You're managing so much stuff. I had two small children who were 2 and 6 at the time. I think she was 5, actually. She wasn't even 2. They were nearly 2 and 6, you know, super young. And that really kept me going. They were just, you know, the light of my life, that I had to keep going. I had to keep my routine. I kept their routine in those difficult days, not knowing, I guess, just how things were going to change when he woke up and how difficult the communication would be. And then him coming home, there's so many different stages, isn't there? And, you know, I know our listeners will be at really different time points in their journey with brain injury. But certainly when he came home, I remember my daughter was so excited about him coming back. Yay, daddy's coming home. And I kind of think she felt like he was going to be the same daddy, was going to be back and everything would be back to normal. And as we know, they're not. They're not.
No, and I think in a way that's the story of the journey over the last 5 or 13 years, isn't it? And I think that it's made me use the word normal very differently, because actually what we have now is something different from what we had before. But actually we have something that's been redefined, with brain injury being a big part of that definition. But I, when thinking about this, feel strongly that actually, whilst it is a huge part of that journey that has changed our direction completely, I think, you know, in life, in work, as a couple, as a family, and it affects all of areas of our life, but I don't want to feel that it defines us. It doesn't define us completely, because in those 13 years, we are still our own people. And we've done things and had experiences and done things on our own and shared things that we may not have done had we not been in this position. Some good, some not so good. I don't want to be wholly defined by it.
So I think it's incredibly, incredibly important that we don't, because it's something that's happened. But yeah, absolutely shouldn't define who we are, who they are as a family. I even said, you were saying to Paul the other day, you know, he does dwell on it a lot. And I think that's kind of the difference, is he's made great waves of progression, from not being able to talk properly or walk properly to, you know, living a life where he can do stuff, he can feel some purpose, he can help out with the children. But he does have a tendency to dwell on what has happened, and that's kind of moving through that. He still hasn't had that acceptance. And I was like, look, just forget you've had a brain injury. Just try to, you know, just kind of move on. There's so much comparison. I have definitely been through that stage. You know, I would say probably the first 3 years of that brain injury, I was slightly in denial, keeping going. Okay, he's and you can see in that time, you can see the progression. There are leaps and bounds to start with. Obviously, everyone's different, but with Paul, he was doing so well. He was getting really good rehab with the community team. And then actually then COVID hit. And I think that had a big effect. He wasn't as getting as much help. He felt, you know, he was categorized as vulnerable, so then he was not doing as much as he usually did. I was very busy homeschooling 2 young children. Everybody remembers those days. Yes, they did happen, trying to forget them. And then coming out of that and then seeing everybody else again and thinking and just really missing that person and that life that I had. And I think it really hit me when we came out of kind of those COVID times and started seeing lots of people again. And I remember just being at a barbecue, actually. Paul wasn't there. He didn't want to make the journey over because it was quite far. I wasn't feeling great. I was chatting to some of the other, you know, my friends' husbands, and just thinking, oh my goodness, like, Paul's just not, doesn't help out like dads do or husbands do, and he can't do certain things. And it really made me sad, I guess, that person was lost. I'd lost that aspect of him.
Yeah, I don't know if there's something about barbecues, because I seem to remember a barbecue as well. And I don't know whether it's barbecues are quite complicated ways to get together, but there's it, or maybe it's the sort of, you know, the gender roles that are often prescribed with people doing barbecues. But yeah, I seem to remember a feeling as well. And I have it on other occasions too, of being quite alone, I guess, and seeing other people with partners who take the lead on things, and that kind of frustration of having to ask or direct. But then sometimes some people say, I have to do that anyway. So I don't know. But I do think that, yes, that's hard to have lost. And I think the main point there is about really grieving some of the loss and how you then move on from that and assimilate, you know, assimilate the changes so that actually grieving as a process allows you to move on. I think that the feeling sad actually also brings an acknowledgement of the situation, and that allowing yourself to grieve that in fact allows you to move on.
God, Julia, that's so true. It is so true. You know, I felt like I hadn't, there was this constant kind of denial, and then I kind of hit this part of my life and I was like, suddenly all hit me at once. I've lost my husband. He's still here and I'm so grateful for that. But he isn't the same as he used to be. His essence is still there, absolutely. But every now and then, you know, I guess I look at wedding photos. Sorry.
Okay, take a moment. Yeah. And it's hard in moments like that, isn't it? But I know that the way that you approach this is also that actually that isn't what you think about all the time, because you do so much. And one of the things that we talked about was how we define ourselves through that too. Mm. So actually thinking about work, and you're back at work now, I'm back at work. Mm. Might be working in a slightly different way.
Yeah.
I'm in a different kind of role, or with a different emphasis anyway. And I think that it's important to acknowledge the sadness as
definitely. Well. Definitely. And feel it when it comes up, because it will, you know, every now and then it will catch you. It's it, you know, it is, it's grief, isn't it? And sometimes it can be the smallest things.
Mm.
And actually what you get about, you know, what you mentioned about being feeling lonely. And I know, you know, a lot of you can be in the greatest relationship and still have moments when you're lonely as well. But I feel, yeah, often there will be that slight loss of that same wing person that you had previously. And they're still there. It's just readjusting those roles. And that really can take some time to embed in. I mean, obviously, we're still quite young in that. 5 years on, 13 years on, how have you found those kind of bedded in?
Well, I've now known Hector for longer with a brain injury than the time we had together before. So that feels pretty significant.
Very significant.
But actually, I do always feel he has my back. So he is my wingman, which is... And I think that Paul will be yours as well. And I think that time does allow that role to be redefined, you know, as our roles have been redefined. And I think that something you said earlier, which is a word that I want to use again as well, is that the essence of him is still the same. And that's something that I remain very, very grateful for with Hector as well, that he is the same amazing person that I fell in love with. And actually, although his capabilities have changed, actually his essence is still the same. And that means that we can find different ways to support each other, and for him to be the wingman, and he's redefined that role. And it's not necessarily knowing that the coleslaw needs to come out of the house at the barbecue or that the chairs need arranging in a certain way or all of those other things, whatever it was that was frustrating, but actually being there and
the love is still there, and the love is still there, right?
Yes, as well as the love. And I think this about any relationship is also the respect, actually, that it's for any relationship to continue and to be successful, there has to be love, but also respect of each other.
Yeah.
And so I think with the changing roles and different capabilities of each of us, you know, not only of Hector, of myself as well, that actually a mutual respect has to be maintained and has to grow into those new roles. Because I actually am not sure that love is just enough.
Not enough to keep it together, to keep it related. Like, you can love someone and not be with them, right? And I will, you know, always love Paul, but sometimes things can get, there can be a lot of conflict when living with someone with a brain injury, particularly in our case, because, you know, Paul was always quite a dominant, combative person. And that has definitely been possibly accentuated since his brain injury. So often there will be, you know, times of conflict. And again, that is normal in any relationships. But when you put communication issues on top of that, it can be really challenging.
And processing and executive functions and planning. Yes, absolutely. And I think that comes back to that point that we were saying before, that many relationships don't survive. Mm-hmm. But I do want to say that 13 years, 4 months, I can't say how many days, I'm sorry. I don't have it down to that that timeline. You know, we're still here. And
well done.
Thank you. Well done, Hector, as well. Yeah.
It's difficult.
And the children. Yeah. But things do change. You know, time, as we know with any situation, time makes changes.
Time doesn't
heal a brain injury. It doesn't heal it. It doesn't make it go away. But it's, I think time has brought lots of healing for the way that we deal with it. And, you know, when I see our children who were 5 and 10, just 5 and just 10 when Hector had his brain injury, the way that they've moved with him, and we've moved as a family through the stage that your children are and through difficult teenage years. And I think that they have become closer.
That's lovely.
Both to each other as siblings and to Hector.
Well,
And to me, actually, I feel that.
Yeah.
And that's wonderful. I mean, gosh, it's great to say that, actually, because I think we are coming out of the other side of you know, all of those teenage years, for my youngest certainly. And I'm just so proud of both of them and how they are. And I think Serena talking about the kind of compassion that she learned through going through that experience. I can see that with my two, and I think with your two, you'll be able to look back when they're that age and see that too.
They are so great, actually. I can really see, particularly the eldest, really being so caring at times and looking out for him. And sometimes Paul will walk a bit slower than us and she'll stop behind and take his arm, or, you know, you can just see it's really helped strengthen their resilience and make them stronger. As a result, and yes, Serena, you referred to, she's our previous episode in episode 9, like so many takeaways from that and how she feels it has made her a better person because it's made her more compassionate and empathetic towards people. It is reconnecting. You are reconnecting with somebody.
Yeah.
Aren't you?
Yeah.
They're slightly different, and that does take time. And with the children as well. So Paul had really, because I had been doing so much with the girls. He was in hospital for a year, well, 10 months. It'd just been us. We'd been our little gang of the three of us for so long, us three girls. And then him coming back, you know, it was very, very different at the time, not being able to do a lot either. So, you know, I would say, you know, there was 2 years where he kind of wasn't really, even longer than that, maybe, connecting very well with the children. So they would just come to me. And then he'd get annoyed, like, oh, it's always mummy, mummy. Like the frustration. I mean, he still has so much frustration. And that's really difficult for partners to handle, really. It really is. Because he can remember who he was, but he's not quite there. And, you know, there is a slight jealousy that I can do stuff and he can't. And he used to be the marathon runner and now I'm running and doing stuff. And he's like, well, I can't run anymore. Like, he does focus on the negatives. And I would say, firstly, it's great he's reconnecting with the children. I've seen a real shift in that since I went back to doing some freelancing. So not being here all the time or as much, and him having to step up has really helped him, empowered him to do things, because there needs to be some purpose and there needs to be meaningful things for him to do. And that's a great thing for him to be able to, you know what, you sort out their teas, you take them to swimming, occasionally that happens. I mean, their hair never gets brushed or anything, but you know, there are things that he can really connect with them, you know, read stories with them, talk to them a bit more. And so that has been really transformational in that respect, in that connection.
Yes, and I think it was for us when the children were small as well. But again, now my children are older, actually, of course, they don't need that input anymore. You know, they put themselves to bed, they maybe read a book. But yeah, so those purposeful activities are actually not available in the same way they were. So I think that some of the questions for me have been, you know, how do we replace those? Because I think when we were talking earlier, you were saying how you feel that Paul is still improving, that you're still seeing improvements after 5 years. And I think that's a real message to our listeners as well, that improvements continue for so long. I'm not sure I would say the same, actually, 13 years on. However, I do think that all of the strategies to help our loved ones continue to improve and that they themselves are making are just as important, because they're needed to maintain that progress and the position that they're in. You know, as we're now getting older, and, you know, signs of aging are starting as well. but I think it's really important to be as active in thinking about all of the strategies that you're now using with your younger ones. And also, yeah. I mean, many people, of course, may not have children in this situation. And so those other things that people are doing to bring in all of those different ways of finding the purposeful activity, keeping the conversation alive, positive risk-taking, continue, I think, to be important throughout the journey.
So are those some of the strategies you're using?
Yes, I think that for Hector and I, we both make a real effort to keep in touch with friends. We go to see people, you know, we have a change of environment. And I think for me, that's really important. And for Hector as well. Mm-hmm. And actually, before Hector was ill, we both supported each other in doing things independently. And we still try and do that. Mm. I mean, that's become, I think, at times it's been difficult for me, especially after his seizures. It was difficult to allow myself to go away and also to think about Hector having that time to himself and, you know, kind of suffering the sort of effects of projecting what might happen if I wasn't there. But actually now I think we both recognize the importance of those times. And still, like you say, about you being back at work and Paul stepping up into those roles, I think it's the same too, you know, still being away and having charge of the house or deal with situations that of course need to be manageable and risk needs to be managed. And, you know, it's not as straightforward as it was. But I think, yes, those strategies still remain important. And it's good for me to be reminded of them, because I also think that as time has moved on, it's been very easy to let some of that go. And to fall into that trap that I never thought I would be, of just being a bit too complacent and just and picking up and doing things that actually, with a little bit more time and effort, I could support Hector to be doing. And I think that's something that I need to be really cognizant of as we move through with time. Because otherwise it doesn't give him the space to step in, to step up, to do, and for us to jointly do things together.
And take some of the load off you as well. I mean, often, and Paul is doing, you know, more of the cooking. And I mean, the other day he emptied the washing machine. And whenever these things happen, it's, you know, there may be some things to clear up. You know, food is all over the floor. There's 100 pounds have been used. And then, you know, he's hung the washing up in really random places, like wrinkled, you know. So, you know, it does take a bit of redoing sometimes, but I have to give him credit for doing it. And at least he is recognizing that the washing machine has finished and emptying. And actually that's a big thing, like the dishwasher, you know, emptying that, not breaking too much stuff. Not always.
Breaking stuff. But also I think, you know, with thinking about our roles in that, that means that you have had to think about letting go of some of that stuff. So what if the clothes are wrinkled, you know? Yes, okay, difficult, because then you've got to get the iron out and it makes twice as much. But at the same time, which are those things that actually we can hand over, we can delegate, and where are our priorities?
You're juggling, I feel like I juggle a lot. We do, you know, you're looking after, you may be looking after children, you're looking after another person or caring for them. You're looking after the house, you're doing work, you're doing podcasts, you're doing other, you know, projects. So yeah, life is busy, but also take time for you as well, for the carer.
Yes, yeah. And certainly we have to make sure that we keep going and in the best way possible.
Looking sort of where we are now, I think the key thing with Paul is, you know, that there is lots of things that he's improved at, and he's connecting better with people, with friends, with the kids, with me a bit better. It's actually digging into community ties a little bit more. And now what I'm really finding 5 years on is kind of the emotional sides and the mental well-being, him now realizing and having that acceptance about what he can and can't do, and getting used to this situation, and for, you know, absolutely us as well. And that definitely comes bit by bit, and I wouldn't say I'm 100% there, but I am starting to feel a level of acceptance now about the situation, about Paul being Paul now, and not comparing him, you know, we all change anyway, right? I have definitely, this experience has massively changed me. Paul's, you know, brain injury, it has brought about different aspects of him, or it's highlighted certain things. It's kind of navigating that and how you react to it as well. And I'm not saying I always react to it wonderfully, because we definitely have moments, right? Let's get real here. Have moments when it is difficult and there are challenges.
Absolutely. I mean, we had a moment yesterday, you know, moments carry on, but also moments are part of life, aren't they? And I think that's, you know, whilst of course it's those moments are challenging because of brain injury, I would say, and some difficulties of communication and miscommunication. I have a role to play in that as well. It's also how I'm reacting, how I'm dealing with the situation, how I'm trying to take over or redefine something or use the wrong words. And it's then how you deal with those moments.
And it's figuring it out and, you know, being kind to yourself. It's okay. We're not going to get it right all the time, and that's okay.
And it's being kind to yourself and to each other.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because actually that's where the relationship is, isn't it? It's our relationship with ourselves, but it's also, if it's going to last, it's our relationship with each other. So it's being kind to each other as well.
For sure. Absolutely. Oh, Julia, it's been such a pleasure. And there's so much other stuff that we can get into, right?
I know. I think we've only just started.
Kind of scratching the surface on this one, really. Yeah. That's for another episode.
Yeah. And hey, 5 years on, we can come back to, you know, seeing where we are then.
I mean, what I will say is there has been a great deal of progression. And if you're in that place at the moment where you are finding it really, really difficult, time does help. There is so much going on because you're caring for somebody that is struggling with lots of different things, physically, mentally. And so are you. So yes, be kind, because it is a process for both of you. And if you've got family, for them as well, and taking it step by step and helping them as much as you can, and your reaction to things. There's a lot going on, but just know that I have found from my experience, and that's all I can really say for, because everyone's different, things are starting to get a little bit easier in some ways. It's always like, to start with, it was really challenging. Everything was all over the place. And now it's kind of more his relationship with himself, I suppose, in some ways, and his mentally getting his head around who he is and how he can go forward in life and finding his path, because it's what he used to do has changed. So it's redefining who he is, and in a way we're redefining who we are.
Yes, your path together. And when I look back over 13 years, now I do just want to finish up by reflecting on the wonderful friends, family, new friends that we've made, and wonderful experiences that we've had, and fulfillment at work in the area that I work in disability, which is a new area for me, but one, because of my lived experience, feel so passionate about. And I think that a journey is a good way to describe it. And someone once told me that safari in Swahili means journey. And it feels like a bit of a safari, but you know, it's been a good one, and I'm pleased that we are sitting here today able to talk in the way that we are.
Yeah, it is really important. You know, I have to say, talking about it does really, really help. And finding that person, you know, I'm so grateful I've got Julia, and I, you know, do hope that we are, well, I know that we are helping others to connect in some way. And do reach out if you've ever got any questions or anything. Find us, you know, Instagram, onagood.day. You know, you're not alone. And I think that's one of our goals behind this podcast, is helping others to know that there's others in a similar situation. You're not alone. And it's okay to feel stressed sometimes. It's okay to feel challenged. It's all completely normal. And don't feel you have to be a saint the whole time.
And there are lots of good days, even if it might not seem where you are that there are many, but there are good days to come, and they are possible.
Absolutely.
They will come again.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for listening to On A Good Day. As I said, you can find us on Instagram, onagood.day. We're also on Twitter, onagood_day. Please share this with others. We're a brand new podcast, so we want to get this out to as many people as we can who it will benefit. Subscribe if you haven't already. Take a screenshot of this episode if you found it useful, and share it with your network.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much. And until next time, have a very good day.